ವ್ಯಾಸೂರನಂದನ ವ್ರಜಚನರಂದನ ಯಮುನಥೇರ ಕನುಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪದ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪದ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪದ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪದ ಜಯ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ 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 ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ
Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasi Sri Radha Shama Sutta Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kundarada Kundi Kudu Govardhan Ki Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Jagadish Pandit Ki Jai Sri Jiva Goswami Ki Jai Gaura Bhimanande Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Before we start, just my obeisances to all of you who have braved the weather to come out, and my obeisances to all of you who are comfortably seated at home in front of your computer with the heat on. Send some heat our way. Also, looking at the deities, I have a favorite little sloka I invented. When the club is near, there is no fear. All right. So we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18, text 29 and 30, speaking about Jagadish Pandit and Jiva Goswami. So we're going to quickly go through a bit of this. I'm just going to chant the verses and the translation.
Adbhuta Purva Sahasa Shutribhyam Arti Tatmana Brahmana Pratyabhudvamam Matsaro Manyo Evacha.
Translation. O Brahmanas, these circumstances, having distressed him with extreme hunger and thirst, the king directed toward the sage his anger and envy, which he had never before directed toward a Brahmana. When a king like Maharaj Parikit, to become angry and envious, especially at a sage and a Brahmana, was undoubtedly unprecedented. The king knew well that Brahmins, sages, children, women, and old men are always beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. Similarly, the king, even though he commits a great mistake, is never to be considered a wrongdoer. But in this case, Maharaj Parikit became angry and envious at the sage due to his thirst and hunger by the will of the Lord. The king was right to punish his subject for coldly receiving him or neglecting him, but because the culprit was a sage and a brahmana, it was unprecedented. As the Lord is never envious of anyone, so also the Lord's devotee is never envious of anyone. I'll repeat that point in Prabhupada's purport for the benefit of all of us. As the Lord is never envious of anyone, so also the Lord's devotee is never envious of anyone. The only justification for Maharaj Parikit's behavior is that it was ordained by the Lord. Text 30. Satu Brahmarishya Amshe Gatashum Ugaram Rucho Usha Vini Gacham Danas Kotya Nidhaya Purva Agata. Translation. When leaving, the king, being so insulted, picked up a lifeless snake with his bow and angrily placed it on the shoulder of the sage. Then he returned to his palace. The king thus treated the sage tit for tat, although he was never accustomed to such silly actions. By the will of the Lord, the king, while going away, found a dead snake in front of him, and he thought that the sage, who had received him coldly, thus might coldly be rewarded by being offered a garland of a dead snake. In the ordinary course of dealing, this was not very unnatural. But in the case of Maharaj Prakash dealing with a Brahmana sage, this was certainly unprecedented. It so happened by the will of the Lord.
Om Jnana Chandran Tasya Arjunam Jana Shilakaya Chaksa Unmilita Minatas Mai Sri Guru Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vipale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Phenomeni Namaste Saraswati Deva Gaura Vanta Chari Nirvase Shasri Nivari Pasa Chari Shari Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pandam Manjayate Guru Yakrivata Maham Vande Shri Guru Madhini Tarnam Vancha kalpa tulubhyas cha kripa sindhu bhaheva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure. My obeisance is unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. Repeatedly in these two verses, Prabhupada uses the word unprecedented. Not once, not twice, but several times. It's interesting if we look at the actual definition, the actual meaning of this word, and understand its application here. In the dictionary, we see that the unprecedented is described as without previous instance, never before known or experienced, unexampled or unparalleled. One time, Prabhupada was asked something, I forget exactly what the question was, but his response was his eyes got very big and went, something very uncommon. So, in that application, in that sense, we see that the circumstance described here, the king is unprecedented, never before seen, unexperienced, unparalleled in its action. Now, this makes even more interesting in the fact that Prabhupada, in the purport in the second verse, describes these actions as tit for tat. This is pretty much, I think, an American phrase. I don't know of any, I'm sure, probably some variation of that in other languages, but tit for tat. And when he mentions that, it's noting that this is an uncommon action, this tit for tat. And it was uncommon at that time. And particularly, a type of tit-for-tat mentality was uncommon for presiding ruler. So, of course, now it's a fact that this type of behavior, this type of action is very commonplace. It's actually expected. It's actually become the norm. Everyone sees this. Even beyond that, it's not even expected as the norm. More than that, more grievous action is seen. There's two separate instances in very recent history. In government houses of parliament, I forget the particular country, where there was a disagreement between the two different parties, and it descended into an actual all-out, everybody in, let's pile it on, let's get a piece of this action, fist fight, right in the chambers of the governing body. And we're not even talking about our own government leaders here in this country right now. This is true. I mean, literally, you had 10, 15 men boxing it out on the floor of the government building. So, I mean, and we see this on the news, and we're like, yeah, okay,
to be expected. But at this time, this type of low mentality, this type of degraded action by a government leader was not expected, was not seen, was not heard of. I mean, we have the example of Venu Maharaj, but his was even, he didn't even bother for tit for tat. He just cut your head off and went on. You know? I mean, Venu Maharaj was far example of this type of thing. But and it's not that there weren't ever arguments. I mean, we see that the bickering between the followers of Lord Shiva and the followers of Daksha. That was one thing. Of course, that escalated a bit. But even in the arguments between Govardhan Hill and Pulastamuni. I mean, when Pulastamuni first set Govardhan down to take care of business, he came back to lift Govardhan again. And of course, we all know the story. He couldn't lift him. And so he very politely said, "Oh, my dear mom, let's get on with things, you know." At which point Govardhan reminded him, "I'm sorry, we had an agreement, and the agreement was if you set me down, I stay there." It was at this point that Pulastamuni became angry. And it's interesting what he says, because he harangues Govardhan that you're supposed to be satisfying my needs. I have a desire to have you in my ashram. And that in itself capsulizes this whole mood that's presented in the exchange between Prithvi Maharaj and the Brahmin, that you're supposed to be serving me. Now, of course, Pulastamuni has the entire wrong idea of Govardhan Seva. We don't go to Govardhan to have Govardhan fulfill our desires. So because that was his mentality, he ultimately was not able to get the shelter of Govardhan. Similarly, this exchange between Maharaj Prithvi and the Brahmin, it shows a type of selfishness that was never before seen in Maharaj Prithvi. A selfish personality motivated by demeaning anger. And it resulted in an action that was well unheard of. It just, no one who was in a position of power and leadership such as the great king had behaved like this before. So how do we understand this? Maharaj Prithvi has suddenly lost the sense of decency. He's lost his respect for the Brahminical order, which is the foundational stone, the foundational cornerstone, if you will, of Vedic kings, the respect for Brahminical order. And we've seen repeatedly that whenever there is no respect for the Brahminical order, everything falls apart. How is it that he suddenly lost his humility? Again, he turned to Prabhupada. Prabhupada gives a very clear direction how we understand it. This is the will of the Lord. Plain and simple. And here again, more than once, repeatedly in these two purports, Prabhupada says this. This is the will of the Lord. There's a lecture series I'm listening to in the mornings of Prabhupada, and he's speaking on Vidura's return to Maharaj Yudhishthira and kind of giving him a report on what's going on in Dwarka and with the Yadu dynasty. And Prabhupada notes how Vidura was a very compassionate speaker. Prabhupada goes into great detail in that particular class, talking about the Lord's pastimes on earth and how when the Lord decided to leave, he had to wind everything up and take all these personalities back to the spiritual world with him. And how to do that. Thus, this was the result, or this was the culmination of this unheard of drunken fight within the family. Prabhupada again mentions, this was all instigated by the will of the Lord. So by the will of the Lord, unheard of events can take place. And the saying here that to wind down the previous yuga, to usher in the presence of Kali Yuga, because as much as Kali Yuga may not be wanted, I mean, just imagine you're the personality of an entire yuga. Nobody wants him. Isn't Satya Yuga around? Could you go get him instead? Oh, color.
Yeah, okay, have a seat, thank you.
Nobody, it's like you come into the room, it's like, oh, he's here. Actually, it's an interesting point, because Sanatana Goswami mentions that if we see a devotee, you know, sometimes we have relationships, and if we see a devotee and we think, oh, that one, John, and Sanatana Goswami says, it's a big offense. So, Kali is like that, the personality of Kali, oh, Kali Yuga, John, Maribor. So, you know, but, you know, this was necessary. This is the order of events. This is the turning of time. So, you know, these activities have to begin to make their presence. And so it's by the will of the Lord that they're introduced. And it's quite amazing to see how the Lord works in this way. And this vision of seeing how the Lord works in this way can only be understood by the Bhakti, by a devotee who has placed themselves under the guidance and under direction of a pure devotee of the Lord. We see this mentality is also very prominent there in the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although highly placed spiritual personalities, they would often present themselves, manifest themselves in submissive positions for the sake of satisfying the Lord's will, for the will of the Lord. Maharaj Prakrit, this activity was beyond him, but for the will of the Lord, this came to take place. So one such personality would be Jagadish Pandit. It's mentioned that the wives of the sacrificial brahmanas in Braj, we know this story, Krishna and Balaram and the big ceremony, some of those wives took their birth as Jagadish and Hiran, two brothers. And Mahaprabhu was honored to take prasadam in their home on the Ekadasi day. Now, that's from the Gaurakonadeshi. Also mentioned is that in Braja there was a dancer named Chandrahasa. Excuse me. Who was very expert in dancing and tasting the various flavors of rasa by that dancing. In Chaitanya Lila, that Chandrahasa became Jagadish Pandit, who also took great pleasure in dancing for the Lord. Now, both Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur, and here's Gaurakana Sutta Tattvika Chandrika, and Kavi Karnapur, which, because it's Kavi Karnapur, also means that she and the same, because that's his father, and that's who he checked everything with, you can say. In his book, Gaurakana Deshikipika, they both agree that these different personalities came from Krishna Lila and manifested themselves in the one form of Jagadish Pandit. Now, this is really unprecedented. We see it happen several times in Gaura Lila, where multiple personalities, sometimes even more than one, will manifest in the form of one individual. I guess you could call it transcendental schizophrenia. And who are you? Well, I'm there depending on the day of the week. I'm right. But we understand from these two great acharyas, Kavi Karnapur, Shakyamuni Thakur, that this is possible. This is the unlimited nature of the spiritual energy, that it is not bound by the same restrictions that we have. If there's more than one personality residing in our body, we're sent to some place to have some type of, you know, examination and maybe some, a detention or whatever. You know, it's not seen as a very good thing. You know, but here we see that several personalities can enter into the form of one person. So this Jagadish Pandit was like that. Now, Jagadish Pandit further was considered both Nityananda Shaka and Chaitanya Shaka. He was a friend and dear associate of both. He was a branch, Chaitanya Charitamrita describes, of both Nityananda and Chaitanya in the trees of devotion service. He hailed from the town of Guwahati. Guwahati is in what we modern day know as Assam, once India was broken up in all these different countries. And his father's name was Kamalaksha. But now, both of his parents, his father and mother, were both great devotees to Lord Krishna. And when they departed this world, he and his wife, Rukmini, and his brothers, he had two brothers, Hiranya and Mahesh, they all moved to Mayapur on the banks of the Ganges. And Jagadish built a home very near, practically right next door to Jagannath Mishra. And Jagadish Pandit and Jagannath Mishra became very, very close friends. Very, very dear to each other. And this partially due to their being about the same age. And Jagadish and Jagannath Mishra and Rukmini and Satyamata all had a very similar mood of parental affection towards Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to little Nimai. Dukhi was just like a mother to Nimai. And actually sometimes even served as his wet nurse. I had a conversation with my wife on this because I mean, here in America, we don't have much American culture. We don't have much experience with this idea of wet nurse. Although growing up in Krishna consciousness, my children actually experienced that. But this is an interesting point about wet nurses, that they're not always someone who's lactating due to having children of their own, which is kind of interesting. You might even say unprecedented. It's cropping up a bit today. But sometimes, out of parental affection, a woman would produce milk as though she were lactating, even though she may not be. So, this is the interesting nature of this phenomenon. So, Nimai, being the son of Sachi, none other than the son of Yasoda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnate, can incorporate all of these different aspects in his pastimes. It's not possible for anyone other than an eternal associate of the Lord to have the good fortune to look upon the Lord like this as his son. And this is one reason why Prabhupada says that the Vaishnava philosophy is superior. Because in most of your traditional religions, God is seen as the Father. Father means order supplier. You want something, you go to the Father. Dad, I need this, you don't need that. Father is obligated to supply. If the father doesn't supply, then he's seen as neglectful. I'm dependent on him. So this is the mood in most religious institutions, most religious theologies. But in the Vaishnava school of thought, God becomes our son so that we're providing for him. We're serving him. We're supplying his needs. Jagadish Pandit also had his own son. His name was Rambhadra Goswami. One other story, which we'll try some other time. So, Mahaprabhu manifested, he showed through his pastimes to Jagadish Pandit how dear to him Jagadish Pandit was. Mahaprabhu was the father of Sankirtan, we know, and even as a child, he often tricked people into chanting the holy names. And he would, as a baby, by his actions, bring about among Sachi and her different elderly lady gopi friends, they would all clap and sing the names of the Lord, and you know, in order to try and get Nimai to stop from crying, we don't know the story. And in this way, they would be able to calm him down. Now, one day, it was on a Kazi, particularly noted, because later in his adult years, this is one of the things that you might ask him for such, simply just follow the class. So Akadasi was commonly followed, very strictly followed. So one day you might continue crying. And Satyamata and the local ladies, they all did their clapping and chanting and kirtan, and this didn't pacify him. And Jagannath Mishra joined in the chanting, you know, and this didn't pacify. And so the parents, you know, as parents would become, they were a little anxious, a little confused. You know, asking them, what do you want, child? What can we do to, you know, make you satisfied? Of course, he wasn't a baby at this point. He was a little bit older, toddler. So, Jagannath Mishra asked him, so, my dear son, what can we do to get you to stop crying? And he might look at his father and address him. He said, today, at the house of our neighbor, Jagadish Pandit, they made an offering of rice to their Vishnu deity. I want to eat some of that prasad. So if you go and get me that prasad, then I'll be very satisfied and I'll stop crying. Now, Jagannath Mishra was amazed by this statement on two counts. One, how could Nimai know that in the house of Jagannath Mishra, some rice is being offered on a codicil? Because it would be assumed on a codicil there's nothing being offered that's not a codicil itself. Not that the Supreme Lord has to follow a codicil. We sometimes note and plan accordingly that on a codicil, gluggements are still offered at the evening offering. And if you happen to be around at the correct time, you may be fortunate enough to secure them, when on other days you probably wouldn't. So you just have to take them home, put them in the fridge. Not that I remember, but anyway, so how was it that Jagadish knew that rice is being offered at, Nimai knew that rice is being offered at Jagadish's house? And secondly, why was he requesting this? Because it was a codicil. And in our home, we don't eat things like this. I believe there's been different versions of this, but I believe Prabhupada said under 8 and over 8. So you don't have to follow a codicil. So, what if I got 11 more years? At any rate, so Jagannath Mishra did go to Jagadish Pandit's home. And he was surprised to see that, yes, there in front of the deity was a large plate of very, very nice rice on a banana plate with ghee poured on top and a tulsi leaf on top of it. I think there are a few things as tasty as fresh hot rice with fresh ghee on top. Very wonderful. So Jagannath said to Jagadish, you know, my son has requested this Mahaprasad from your deity. But, you know, I'm a bit concerned that he shouldn't really eat grains. It's the ecology. This is an indication of how close Jagannath Mishra and Jagadish Pandit were. Jagannath Mishra had some concern about A, following religious principles, and B, what is proper and not proper in raising his child. So as a parent, we'll sometimes find another parent, you know, I'm thinking this, that, you know, what is your thought? This is how close the two of them were. This is an unspoken indication of the friendship here. So, Mahaprabhu's eternal associate, Jagadish Pandit, was very clear and very well informed internally that this was simply Gopal and his farmer's Nimai who was hungry. And so without any hesitation, he gave the Mahaprasad. It mentions not just here, you know, sometimes you go someplace and you're given a little palm of Prasad. Okay, thank you very much. And he gave the entire offer to Jagannath Mishra. And then he accompanied him. And as soon as Nimai received that plate of Mahaprasad, nice hot rice with ghee on top, he very happily and joyfully stopped his crying and began to eat, along with all of his friends. He wasn't miserly. Boys, boys. And so they began to enjoy this wonderful feast. It's incredible. Sorry. So in doing so, he performed another amazing activity, in that he allowed Hiranya and Jagadish to see his father Gopal, which was who they were, you know, remembering from their previous pastime. He mentions that his bodily luster appeared like a fresh rain cloud. He had a peacock in his head. And the beauty of his form was reflecting in the faces of the other boys that were also very, very happy in his company and enjoying this feast. And such a charming and beautiful sight to Jagadish and Hiranya that this was revealed to them. And they began to very loudly chant the names of Hari, 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 appreciating this vision that they had been given by Nimai Pandit. And they were very, very happy in understanding that they had been a part of this pastime with the Lord. Now, Chaitanya Charitamrita, it notes that this path, it gives just little indication of this pastime, very short. It's given in detail in other places, Chaitanya Bhagavata particularly. Chaitanya Charitamrita also mentions that Jagadish Pandit purified the entire universe because his love for Nimai Pandit pours from him like torrents of rain, and that these tears purified the entire universe. Sometimes the Lord will grab something, even if the devotee doesn't offer it to him by different means, he will get that gift, and such was the mood in which he took this offering from Jagadish Pandit. So it mentions that just as Mahaprabhu conquered Jagadish Pandit in this way, similarly, his dear companion Nityananda considered Jagadish Pandit to be one of his own intimate associates as well. And Nityananda was said to be the life and soul of Jagadish Pandit. And Jagadish Pandit was present at Nityananda's pastime at Panihati for the Chiradayu festival. Another story there. Now, before taking sannyas, Mahaprabhu instructed Jagadish Pandit that he should move to Neelachal and spread Krishna consciousness there and practice Harinam Sankirtan. This, of course, was because he knew that he was going to be residing there himself and he wanted to continue with the association of Jagadish Pandit. So he instructed that he should move there ahead of time. And Jagadish Pandit, understanding the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna, and the son of Jagannath Mishra, Sri Guru Sandhya, being one and the same, he considered them to also be non-different than the Lord Jagannath, all three of them. So when he arrived in Puri, he went to Jagannath for darshan, of course, and his heart was melted by seeing just a beautiful form of Lord Jagannath. And when he was returning at one point, this is further down after he was out here to Bengal, he was feeling great separation from this mood he had developed in understanding Krishna and Mahaprabhu and Jagannath all be the same. And the separation was very, very strong. So, you know, thousands and thousands of people come to Puri every day on pilgrimage, and they all take Jagannath's darshan. But how many of them are filled with this kind of separation when they leave? So if one is able to experience this, in one sense, it would be very, very blessed, very fortunate. So in this way, Lord Jagannath saw that Jagadish Pandit was crying and very mercifully appeared to him in a dream and told him to take one deity of him and to serve that deity. And he simultaneously, Jagannath, appeared in a dream to the king of Orissa and ordered him that at the next Navakalevara, when the wooden deity of Jagannath is changed, that outgoing form of Jagannath should be given to Jagadish Pandit. Now, this was not the usual custom. The custom is that after the deity is changed, and this happens ever so often, the deity is then put into a tank of water. And over the course of time, produces that. So, when King of Puri met Jagadish Pandit, he considered, this must be a very special, very highly honored devotee. And he respected him and gave that form of Jagannath to Jagadish. Now, this is not a small little Jagannath on your home altar. Jagadish Pandit prayed to Lord Jagannath. He said, my Lord, how is it possible that I'm going to be able to take care of this form of you and take you back with me in my home and How will I move your bhakti?
Lord Jagannath revealed to him that when the time is necessary for you to move me, I will become as light as a piece of cork.
And you simply cover me with some cloth, tie me to a stick, and you can take me very easily.
Jagadish would have to make permanent arrangements somewhere for Jagannath to be. So he enlisted the aid of two Brahmins. This is after his departure from Jagannath Puri, and after Mahaprabhu's departure as well. So he took turns carrying this deity of Jagannath, and they made it as far as Jasohara village on the banks of the Ganga, near a town called Chakdaha. And Jagadish left that Jagannath deity with these two Brahmins, and he went to take his bath in the Ganga. And these Brahmins had been assisting Jagadish in moving the deity, who had agreed to become light as a cork. But when Jagadish left, the deity of Jagannath became extremely heavy, and the two of them were no longer able to hold him up on this little wooden sticks that they had tied him to for transport. And so when Jagadish came back from his bath, he saw that Jagannath had set himself down on the ground, much in the same way Govardhan had set himself down, and realized that this is where Jagannath is going to stay. And so he built the temple there, at that spot. And this is a very famous spot where this happened, because this place, Chakdaha, was where Prajumna had killed the Sambhara demon in previous yugas. And it became known as Prajumna Nagara. And it's also the place where Bhagirathi, when he brought the Ganga down, buried the wheel of his chariot at this place. So it had a very long history of being a very religious and spiritually focused place. And so in this way, he established his temple there, and that temple is still found there. So a very interesting pastime between Jagadish Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Jagadish Pandit and Lord Jagannath. Today is also the day we honor Jiva Goswami. How can anyone speak about Jiva Goswami in the scant few minutes that we have left? Previously, I spoke about Jiva Goswami for 2 hours. So, actually, the person we should hear about Jiva Goswami from is Sri Gauri Sitala, who Indrajyotsna Maharaj and myself affectionately call Sitala Deparani. I say this because there is some consideration on her part of doing a book on Jiva Goswami, a follow-up book, if you will, to Hrinayarthandas Thakur book. She says that she doesn't think she'll be able to complete it, and, you know, there's just too much uncertainty. And just as an Hrinayarthandas book took 10 years for her to complete in that same move, maybe this will happen. Maybe she'll live long enough. Maybe she'll be, what was it she told me? I just don't have the energy I had when I wrote that book. So, but at any rate, you have me. So, the very magnitude of Jiva Goswami's influence, presence in our Sampradaya, scholastically, philosophically, lila-wise, it's just unfathomable. Such a major, major importance. And the teachings that he gives are so deep, and yet at the same time so very deep. We look back a bit, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Vallabha, they were, we know, three brothers, and they were all engaged under different names at different times in their life in the service of his Anushtha. And among these three, only one of them had a descendant. That would be Vallabha. Now, just imagine that. Three such amazing personalities, and only one child. But what a child. People respond, what a child. So they were very wealthy in their opulence and rewarded in their services. And they were able to very nicely set up their situation at Ramkeli. Actually, Shastra explains to us that they established a second Vrindavan, practically, you know, with
replications of all the different places there. And so this type of a background, this type of a circumstances, people with Swami experienced this. But beyond that, his own presence illuminated the entire village that he resided in. His eyes were just like a lotus petal, and every part of his body, every part of the child's body was lustrous and radiant. And he had all the descriptions and all the manifestations of the Mahapurusha. High nose, nose like a sesame fly. And a beautiful forehead, a broad chest, long arms, radiantly golden body. Now, Jiva Goswami had the association, very briefly, of Sri Gaurasundara. Although he was just a baby, just a very young child at the time. And Mahaprabhu placed the dust of his own lotus feet on the head of Jiva Goswami and indicated to others that in the future, this child will be the preceptor of the entire Bodhya Sampradaya. And though he was just a mere child, Jiva Goswami kept that vision, that form of the Lord in his heart. And as he grew up, while he would be eating, or while he would be lying down, or even in his dreams, and while he was awake, at all times, he was constantly meditating, thinking, and remembering this form. So later, once his uncles had renounced his family life, his residence there under the service of the Shah, Jiva was left only with his mother. And he would often lay in her lap crying, feeling tears of separation, you know, from all of these great personalities he no longer was seeing. And his mother was very, very compassionate, very understanding of the shattered sadness that was overcoming her son, Jiva Goswami. And whenever he would fall deeply into this, he would sometimes fall to the ground unconscious. Now, at this time, Jiva Goswami was studying under the different local pundits, you know, necessary studies, grammar, poetry, rhetoric, watching the development of his great intellect. His teachers, they all predicted this personality is going to become a very, very respected saintly person. They noted that his intelligence is of such brilliance that it has never been seen before in a child this young. No doubt he will become a highly valued and respected spiritual personality. You might even use the word unprecedented. It's described that Srimad Bhagavatam came to life in the personality of Jiva, that when he would speak about the pastimes of Krishna, he was filled with such happiness, and so much so that when others were around him, no one would dare to speak anything other than Krishna consciousness in the pastimes of. It's noted also that later in his life he composed a system of Sanskrit for the satisfaction of the Lord and composed various rules of grammar and explained all of it in regards to the use of the holy names of the Lord. And this was called Harinamamrita Vyakarana. And it's a system of grammar, Sanskrit grammar, still used in different schools throughout Bengal. So in his childhood, he made beauties of Krishna and Balaram. And his worship of them was unprecedented. It seems to be a common word today. He would cry when he would worship them. He would offer them all the proper worship, snan, bathing, and clothes, and chandan, and flowers, and ornaments, and tasty sweets he would offer, and then he would share those sweets with his playmates. And this was an indication of his kindness to other jivas, that he was even willing to share small prasad with all of his friends. He was so attached to these deities of Krishna and Balaram. He would lay down at night with them, one in each arm. You know, he didn't want to leave them. So he would go to sleep, and then mother would reach down to take them out of his arms. She couldn't. His grip was just too tight. You know? And everyone thought, oh, he's just playing. This is just, you know, he's having some fun with them. But no one understood deeply how attached he was to these. So, Bhakti Ratnakar describes that once in a dream, Jiva saw that his deities, Krishna and Balaram, had taken the form of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and that they were dancing. And in this dancing mood, when he saw this and was observing it, these two lords gave the dust of their lotus feet to Jiva Goswami, and then they disappeared. Now this dream was of great satisfaction and gave some shelter to Jiva, who at this point had become anxious to leave his family, leave whatever activities he was doing at the time, and go and join full-time in the service of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. And he began to think to himself, much as we saw Narottam was thinking in this way, when will I be able to crawl out of this well of family life and devote my full time and energy, my very self, to serving these two most magnanimous lords? But he was the only son, as we mentioned earlier, and it was only through his company that his mother could be somewhat soothed through pangs of separation in her own heart. But, you know, he couldn't give that up. He had that responsibility, which he took very seriously. Of course, you know the story of his father, you know, passing away, and you know, Jiva Goswami was just completely unsettled by this. And it mentions that after this time, his mood of separation, his desire to enter in more deeply to the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, was unable to be consoled. And different family members had tried to encourage him, and you know, but nobody was able to give any benefit, any, you know, comfort. So one friend had suggested, well, maybe if you go to Navadvip, you can bathe yourself in the coolness emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. So with that in mind, he joined a group of pilgrims and headed to Navadvip. Now, Nityananda Prabhu, a totally omniscient super soul seated in the heart of all living entities, he could understand that Jiva was on his way to Navadvip. So therefore, he left from Kadardaha, and after a few days, Jiva arrived at Navadvip, and seeing the beauty of Navadvip, it's just, his heart was charmed, just like so satisfied. He fell down on the ground, of course, offered his obeisances to all the different places, particularly to Mother Ganga, and he inquired from the local villagers exactly where he could find Nityananda, because Nityananda was staying where Sri was funded at this time. And when he arrived there, he knocked on the door, and Nityananda came out, and completely offered, just fell on the ground, offering obeisances. And Nityananda picked him up and said to him, "Are you not the nephew of Rupa and Sanatana?" And his answer to this was to fall down on the ground again, offering obeisances at the feet of Nityananda. And so at this point, Nityananda brought him into the house and began to inquire about the welfare of the family and, you know, how his travels were. And, you know, then he introduced him to all the different devotees in Navadvip that were there waiting, you know, at the arrival. And everyone was very, very happy. The nephew of Rupa and Sanatana had come. And on that very day that he arrived, he received the remnants of prasadam from Nityananda's plate. So the next day, Nityananda took him to the house of Satchimata. And seeing the birthplace of Borasunder, he was just filled with so much happiness. He was just amazed at the beauty of the place and the spiritual nature. And he again fell down on the ground and just rolled repeatedly in the dust. And in that large courtyard, there were many devotees singing kirtan, praising Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Nityananda stood up with all of them, and they just ecstasy of a kirtan, and they fell to the ground, and you know, Jivan started offering obeisances again to Nityananda, and in this way it was just amazing. And then Nityananda pointed out, there, sitting on the veranda watching all of this, was Sachin. She was dressed, it describes, in a white silk chadar. She was wrapped around her shoulders lightly and looked extremely radiant with her white hair blending with her white sari. A picture of the moon, if you will. And though her body was very old and trembling, and she was very thin, still, by her divine fortress, the entire courtyard was emanating. And she was always sitting on the porch chanting the names of Gaurasundara and remembering him. And she kind of became aware that Nityananda has arrived. She covered her head with her sari and called to her servant, "Ishan, Ishan, Sripad has arrived. Please wash his feet." So Nityananda sat. Ishan washed his feet. Nityananda offered obeisances to the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he took a seat near her and introduced her to Jiva Goswami. And Sachimata placed her hand on Jiva Goswami's head, giving her him her blessings. And it mentions that at the touch of the hand of Sachimata, Jiva Goswami just floated into an ocean of great happiness. And then she requested that the two of you should take prasadam. "Take prasadam here at your mother's house today," she said. "I have offered these preparations for the pleasure of Lord Gaurasundara. Now you enjoy them." So in this way, Jiva Goswami spent some days in the company of Nityananda, touring the nine islands of Navadvipa, having a darshan of all the different holy places of the Lord's pastimes. And then he was ordered by Nityananda to set out for Varanasi. And when he arrived there to study under Madhusudana Vachchapati. Now Madhusudana Vachchapati, of course, was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And the conclusions of Vedanta that are contained in the Srimad Bhagavatam and expounded by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been in turn taught by the Bhattacharya to Madhusudana Vachchapati, who had established a school there in Varanasi. And it was there under him that Jiva Goswami mastered these same conclusions for this wonderful Pacific Wanya. After some time, Jiva set out for Vrindavan. And there, of course, he received the shelter of his two uncles, Sanatana and Rupa. They were very pleased to see him. It was a bit like a family reunion, although much, much greater and beyond that, a spiritual family. And they inquired from him the different news and heard how Nityananda had taken him around, how he'd met Mother Sachi, and so on like that. And so Jiva stayed with Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami began to teach him Srimad Bhagavatam. And he could see how quickly and eagerly Jiva was becoming conversant in the Bhagavatam. So Rupa Goswami engaged him in proofreading his manuscript for the book he was working on at the time, Bhakti Rasa Rupa Sindhu. One of the services of Jiva Goswami was to place out on the writing desk for Jiva Goswami his pens and the ink that he would use to write on the palm leaves. Through into Duma Maharaj's conversations with people at the Vrindavan Institute, they came to find a particular book, more like an instruction manual, on how to mix this ink, what the procedure was, and how it was placed, you know, in front of the Goswami for them to use like that. It wasn't just like this ink, it was a whole system, how you mix it. It had to be used fresh every day. So there's actually a book giving instructions on how that's done. So he assisted Jiva Goswami in this way. And eventually Jiva Goswami compiled his own commentary on Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Rasa Nita Sindhu. Also, Sanatana Goswami at that time was working on his 10th canto, his commentary of Vaishnava Dosham of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he had Jiva Goswami proofread that also. Just imagine, you know, the position of spiritual clarity that Jiva Goswami possessed, that Sanatana and Rupa Goswami are having him proofread their writings, which we all hold as the, you know, guidance of our daily lives. And then on the order of Sanatana Goswami, he also wrote a commentary to that called the Laghu Vaishnava Toshi. And so you have the writings of these three, how famous charts, working together with each other for presenting Krishna consciousness movement for the, you know, benefit of human society. This is the golden age of Rajadam. You know, books that are being put out that are just beyond the literary understanding of anybody. So one of Jiva's services also was to daily bring the bath water to Rupa and Sanatana. We'd massage their bodies with oil, and clean their ashrams, worship their deities, cook for them, corrected their manuscripts. So as well as being one of the prominent members of the Six Goswamis, he was a humble servant to Rupa and Sanatana. We know that eventually Rupa initiated him and engaged him in the service of the deity of Radha Damodar. This deity of Damodar is said to have been fashioned by Rupa Goswami's own hand and given as a gift to Jiva Goswami. And of course, we all know these deities are still present there. One time, there was a elderly Vaishnava, Balabhacharya, who had offered some advice. It was critical, but it was polite. But it offered some advice to Rupa Goswami on something he had written. And Jiva Goswami came to hear this. Rupa Goswami just, yeah, that's a very good idea. Thank you very much. You like that? Jiva Goswami came to hear this, and he was not very happy about this. He felt it was completely out of place. And so he very strongly spoke to Baba, corrected him, chastised him. Now, when Rupa Goswami heard this, he felt that Jiva Goswami had acted out of character and that it was not his place being the junior to have chastised or corrected Baba. And so he told him, he said, "You are filled with pride, and therefore you're not a fit resident in Vrindavan. You should be." Very harsh instruction. But Rupa Goswami took this to heart, and he actually moved to a place called Nandagarh. It's about a 45-minute distance from Vrindavan. And Jiva Goswami stayed in the hole, abandoned hole of a crocodile, and began to fast, eating practically nothing. Just maybe some little bit of grain mixed with water and wheat flour. You know, just throw some Jumana water in there and something like that. And in this way, he chastised himself by his own, you know, penance. So much so that all the local residents who came to know of this young Jiva Goswami, because you have to remember he's younger than Rupa and Sanatana, this young boy that's just whittling away to nothing, withering away to nothing, and performing just such a great austerity. Now, at this time, Sanatana Goswami was viewed by many of the residents in Vrindavan like a kind uncle. And they would go to him with different, you know, problems. You know, if there was an argument between a husband and wife, they would take it to Sanatana Goswami. He would sell it, settle it. If there was a disagreement between two businessmen, they would take it to Sanatana Goswami. He would settle it. So he was seen in this. So some of them came to him about this Jiva Goswami was fasting away to death in this crocodile hole. So Sanatana Goswami went to visit him, and he could see, yes, very, very drastic condition. So he went back to Rupa Goswami, kind of in a chiding brotherly way. He said, you know, I'm a little concerned that you're not following the instructions of our Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami, not following. What am I not following? Well, Mahaprabhu instructed us that we should be jiva doya, kind to all jivas. And he left it at that. Rupa Goswami could understand the inner meaning of this. So he brought Jiva Goswami back to his service. Now, Prabhupada talks about this once, and he mentions this guru-disciple pastime. And he says that Rupa Goswami cast out Jiva Goswami to teach us, as modern day devotees, a lesson. And that is that, of course, no one can punish Jiva Goswami. He's a perfectly liberated soul. He's an eternal associate of the Lord. But Rupa Goswami sent him out to teach all devotees that if they're going to reside in Vrindavan, Vajra-vegam, Manasa-kroda-vegam, Jiva-vegam, that they have to particularly be in control of their tongue, of their speech, and remain very humble. And that once you take that, not only for residing in Vrindavan, but in one's own life, one should very much practice it. So this is a comment Prabhupada made on this passage. After the disappearance of Rupa and Sanatana, we won't go into detail on that, Jiva continued on the tradition that was brought by them. And he became the Sampradayacharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas for all of Navadvip, Vrindavan, Jagannath Puri. He was the undisputed leader by dint of his knowledge, his prolific philosophical understanding, his writings, presenting it. It was nobody doubted the fact that he was just, you know, the leader of the entire Sampradaya. Yet he also acted as a humble servant of all the devotees. And whenever devotees from Bengal would come to Vrindavan, he would always receive them in a very wonderful way, arranging for nice prasadam for them, for very comfortable rooms, and personally take them on guided tours of Brajamandala Park. There's still quite a bit more here, particularly his teaching of the three wonderful boys, Shyamananda, Srinivasacharya, and Narottam Das Thakur, and his whole arranging for the distribution of the books back to Janakamata, and so much more. I mean, there's literally, as I said, how can we barely fit any of this in to the few minutes we have here to describe Jiva Goswami? But this is a little, we can call this the tip of the iceberg. We have the whole day before us. I mean, we have our whole life before us. But particularly, Prabhupada indicates that these days of the appearance and disappearance of our acharyas are to be honored and noted. So we have the whole day before us that we can spend reading the different pastimes of Jiva Goswami. One thing Jiva Goswami did do, in the mood of a lot of the concerns of modern Vrindavan, environmentally, ecologically, as far as preserving what little bit is left of it. There was a Mughal emperor during his time that was using Vrindavan as his hunting grounds. He, of course, Prabhupada mentioned Kshatriyas are allowed to hunt. So he was going to Vrindavan and he was hunting in the forest. So due to the relationship that Jiva Goswami developed with him, he was able to request him not to do any hunting there, and that was upheld. So this practice of hunting animals in the Vrindavan forest was scrapped. So one thing that that emperor gave to Jiva Goswami as a present was some writing paper. Now, I'm sure throughout all of our lives we've gotten a little gift, you open it, it's a nice set of writing paper with some envelopes, and, oh, that's nice, thank you very much. It's usually not up there on the high list of why. You know what I got? I got some writing paper and envelopes. But at this time, writing paper was rare. It was only for the very, very wealthy. And only certain persons had access to it. So to be given this gift from the emperor of writing paper to be used for manuscripts instead of palm leaves. It was a very, very great gift and seemed, you know, wonderful. So, anyway, we'll finish there. As I mentioned, there's so much more that we can speak about on Jiva Goswami. Considered to be the most prolific of all the acharyas, 500,000 Sanskrit verses are attributed to him. As I said at the beginning, to be able to understand, to fathom the philosophical and scholastic and personal contribution to Jiva Goswami or something like that is just not possible. But we simply pray that somehow or another we can do some bit of service to assist in his spreading of Krishna consciousness through our modern service to Srila Prabhupada. And this will finish there. Thank you very much. Jiva Goswami ki jai, Jagadish Pandit ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh,